Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello, everyone. Glad to have you listening in today. In case you missed the last two programs, we've been discussing the book Lit Up, One Reporter, Three Schools, 24 Books That Can Change Lives by David Denby. You can still hear last week's program at soundcloud.com. In the search window, type Just the Best Literature. I've provided a link for you on Twitter. That address is at JBLiterature1. Again, that address is JBLiterature1. To me, Denby's book is really compelling. I believe it's an important book for parents and teachers. And here's why. Denby sees a reading crisis for today's teens, especially for the later grade high school teens and early college and university students. He recognizes that a liberal arts education is becoming a thing of the past. Parents and teachers want students to focus their education in the sciences and technology to get the big-paying jobs. Yet it's well known in corporations that they get, well, the smart engineers or the really smart computer programmers or the skilled scientists. They come to work and they find out they can't carry on a conversation. They can't follow directions, and they can't communicate with others. Now, that is a crisis. And who does, let's say, Denby put the finger on? Who is the cause for this crisis? Well, it's kind of, there's two parts to it. He sees the cause for the crisis as, one, the educational system, and two, you parents. Now, you may not like that, but give us a hearing, and I think we can prove to you that you do have a big part in all of this. Now, it is interesting. Denby started working on this problem back in the 90s, and he first talked about what he experienced with higher education in his book titled Great Books, My Adventures with the Indestructible Writers of the Western World. And what Denby noticed is he saw how the influence of multiculturalism was radically changing what students read and what they were taught in schools. So what do we mean by this? Well, the academic left got its foothold in the door and took over college administrations, university administrations. They became the head of the English and humanities departments. Feminists, African-American, Native American, Asian-American teachers and students no longer wanted to read or be taught from books by dead European white men. Now, what did this mean? Well, essentially, authors like Austin, Conrad, Shakespeare, Wolfe, the famous Greeks, and even the Bible as one of the greatest pieces of literature were de-emphasized, and actually they were taken off the shelves. Denby believes that students need to be challenged to read these kind of books to learn how to think, to discover themselves, to be able to converse and communicate. But even more, Denby believes that students, that our older high school age students, the 18-year-olds, the 17-year-olds, the 19-year-olds, he believes that these books from the Western world can really help our teens become better citizens and better people. You know, in this new book, Lit Up, he deals with the same problem, but now it's been compounded by the advancement and the influence of screen technology. And so he wrote this book, Lit Up. I've been reading it. I'm really enjoying it. It's been a help to me, even as a college English instructor. And he wrote the book to challenge parents and teachers to motivate screen-loving teens to come out of their electronic world and find pleasure in reading books. I mean, real books. Yes, the paper kind of books, the books with two covers and a dust jacket, the books that have a great smell. Now, it is interesting, when this new book came out, it was just really at the beginning of the year, Publishers Weekly named Denby a champion of the humanities. It's a really great book for teens. It's a really great book for parents of teens. It's a really good book for college instructors. But it's especially good for, like, the parents of 17 and 18-year-old teens, even 19-year-old teens who hate reading. And let me just give you a new quote from the book. The last couple programs, we've been giving you quotes. But here is a quote directed at you parents. He says, "But the point of view of this book is frankly parental. I wanted to see what the students were like and how they were doing intellectually." Now, I think it kind of shows that, you know, people that love humanities, people that are into liberal arts education, usually are concerned about other people. But what about you? Are you concerned about your own teenager? Do you want to know how your teen is doing intellectually? What if your teen isn't doing well intellectually? Are you alarmed by that? What are you doing about it if you know your teen is not doing well? Are you a little bit frustrated by that situation? Well, I believe we can help you with all that. So here, let me ask you a question. How do you solve the crisis of your teen's dislike of reading? I mean, how do all of us solve it? I'm a parent and a grandparent, and I have 8 grandchildren coming online and going into schools. You know, I'm concerned that they do well intellectually. So when I say we, what do I mean? I mean parents, I mean single parents, I mean grandparents. Let's also include single adults who know teens. Maybe you're an aunt, maybe you're an uncle. Well, there is a way that you can help your teen, and maybe you never quite thought of it this way. So today, let's talk about you, the adult, you becoming a lover of reading, and you developing the habit of reading. Come on, be honest with yourself. Do you have a personal reading crisis? Do you love reading? Do you have the habit of reading? Or do you spend your non-work free hours on a screen? Now, I have a lot of friends that do that. And so you just have to be honest with yourself. Now, if you don't love reading or have the habit of reading, you'll never be able to motivate your teen to love reading. So, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, single adults, you are the key. What you do about reading is the key to get your teens to love reading. Now, I want to tell you an Uncle Bud story. This is my father's younger brother, and he lived in Detroit. I lived in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and every summer they'd come to visit. And Uncle Bud was really kind of a fun guy, and I always felt close to him. And he came one summer. He brought his 2 sons, and it was my cousin Jerry. And you know, it's been probably 40 years since I've seen them, so I can't remember the other cousin. But sorry about that, other cousin, if you're listening in. But Uncle Bud, he caught my older brothers smoking. And I wasn't in on this one. And what I did is I thought, wow, this is going to be really interesting, because I was kind of hoping he'd kind of take my dad's approach. And, of course, they would be disciplined or something. But he pulled them aside, and I just kind of snuck over with them. And he said, look, said this to my 2 older brothers. He said, look, don't you realize smoking is bad for you? And they just kind of looked at him white-faced. And he said, you know, it's really bad for you. It's bad for your health. And my older brother looked at him and he said, well, Uncle Bud, you smoke. And the point is Uncle Bud got a little ticked off right then. And he said, look, don't do as I do as I say. And so I've thought about that many times, and I even thought about that raising my own kids. So I realized if I wasn't doing it, you know, they're not going to do it. Or if I was doing something, they were going to do something. So it really gets back to reading, parents. If you don't love reading, if you don't have the reading habit, and you go to your child or your teen and you say, well, don't do as I do as I say, it's not going to work. So to talk about you now, to talk about you, the adult, to talk about you becoming a lover of reading, to talk about you developing the habit of reading, I brought a very special guest in here with me today, and he's going to help me discuss this whole subject with you. So I have Jeremiah Jocks with me. He is a contributing editor for the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine. He also writes a lot for the trumpet.com website. He and I are colleagues. We both write together. We're in meetings together all the time. And he's also a good friend. So welcome, Jeremiah, to JBL.
It's a real pleasure to be here.
Hey, to get this discussion kicked off, I want to read another quote from Denby. And this is from the book, The Great Books. And parents, I really want you to listen to this. This is what you're going to need to do. You need to go to the mirror, look in it, and if you have the same problem that Denby's talking about, I want you just to admit it. Here's what he says. He says, "Great Books was something else as well, a physically placid, middle-aged adventure story. Lucky and generally content as a movie critic, I was nevertheless jangled by too many media images rattling around in my brain." In other words, essentially what Denby's saying is, well, back in the 90s, he was a screen-loving kid. He was a little bit middle-aged. He wasn't quite the quick kid. But my feeling now is 60 is the new 40, 70 is the new 35. So I'm heading to 70, so I'm going to be a lot younger. But anyway, he realized that he essentially had a reading crisis. He said, "I wanted my head to rattle with other things as well. I needed to go back to school." The earlier book, meaning The Great Books, in part became a search for myself, a movie critic who was feeling lost in a welter of media images and needed to read and think seriously again. It was something of a reclamation job. And so he's actually writing in the lit up book, if I made that confusing, which sometimes I could do that. But he was talking about writing great books and why he wrote it. So he realized that he had a reading crisis. He realized that he was just glutted on all these media images from being a movie critic, and he was a great movie critic for The New Yorker. But notice he said that this book was something of a reclamation job. Now, I don't want to sound too scholarly here, but the word reclamation means restoration to use or recovery. So he felt like he needed some recovery. And so it's really a great written paragraph. The word welter there, I had to look that one up. And the word welter means to become deeply sunk, soaked, or involved. So here, this image he's trying to get across to us is that here he was just like being swirled and tossed by this sea of media images, and he realized he needed to read and think seriously. And that's when he went back to his alma mater, to Columbia University, and he went back to school. So Denby admitted that he had a reading crisis. He was sinking in this sea of media images, but he felt to solve his problem, he had to go back to school and start reading and thinking seriously. So I want to ask Jeremiah, do you have a reading crisis?
Well, I have navigated through some dry spells in the past when books sort of fell by the wayside for other things. But right now, my nightstand is pretty cluttered with a lot of different books.
Oh, so what are you reading?
I took a look this afternoon, and I saw The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. That one I'm a couple of chapters into. Sand and Foam by Khalil Gibran. That's a collection of really profound aphorisms. Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. The Wes Anderson Collection by Matt Seitz.
Okay, wow. Okay, you're putting me to shame here. But I was just kidding, but here's the point, is I know Jeremiah pretty well, and I think he knows me just as well. He's really, very well-educated. He's bilingual. He knows French. He actually studied in France. I met Jeremiah probably in the 90s while he was in school in France, and that'll just give you a little bit of sense for the age difference. He's one of the reasons why I wanted him on, because I knew he could answer that question and there would be more than one book. But I'm reading, of course, all of you know, I'm reading the Denby book, and I'm also back at reading Old Man and the Sea, which we're going to start discussing here pretty much pretty soon on the program. But hey, listeners, what if I asked you the same question? What would you tell me? Is your nightstand cluttered with books? Or maybe is your nightstand holding down the iPad or the screen, whatever screen, like maybe it's your iPhone. So do you need some reclamation? One of the things that we just have to say on this program, if you're going to become a good and habitual reader, it's going to require some hard work and effort in the beginning. So if you're going to commit to the program, you're going to have to commit to doing that. It's a little like physical exercise. You know, I haven't done much of that for a while, and I started again a couple weeks ago. And if you haven't exercised for a while, it's a challenge to get started. And you know, it's a little hard for me to walk up steps these days, a little hard for me to walk down steps these days. So, but yet, I'm starting to feel the benefits, and you know what? I want to do it more. And that's the same thing with reading. You're going to have to put in a lot of work, and good reading takes great effort. So here's one suggestion. Get a reading buddy. Make sure you read the same book. Get together and talk about it. Be like you going back to the classroom. You know, Denby went back to his alma mater, went back to school. And, you know, we do need to be learning. And then once you start reading, think about what you're reading, and then talk it over with someone. You're taking, when you do that, you're taking control of your mind, and you're making it like a strong muscle. You know, it may be that until you start reading, you won't even know you have a jangled mind. But, you know, it'll expose that in you. So I know you can do it, but those are the ways you can get going. Now, one of the reasons why I invited Jeremiah in is just recently, and I'll let him tell you what issue of the Trumpet that we put this in, but I think it was the March issue.
Yes, that's right, March of this year.
March issue. But he wrote a really very profound piece in there. The article is titled, Why the Alzheimer's Pandemic. And he was also able to give a Trumpet Daily program on that. And so it's just very important, an article. And Jeremiah, could you talk a little bit about that article and just refresh people on what you wrote? And then we'll connect that with reading after you do that.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of it was just based on a study that sort of posits the theory that a lack of respect for elderly people could be contributing to this Alzheimer's pandemic. In societies where the older people are sort of cast out and not respected at all, the rates of Alzheimer's seem to be significantly higher than they are in nations where the elderly citizens are reverenced by the community and by the society. So it basically just says that old people should respect themselves as a big part of maintaining and even improving mental health and acuity, but also younger people should really treasure that resource that the senior citizens represent. And so for all ages, if we just learn to cherish our elderly citizens and even those who are aging and not yet aged, then it'll really improve every strata of society there.
So did they give some suggestions on how to help Alzheimer's patients or how we can remedy that? I think one of the things that maybe our listening audience has to understand that you know, this is really predominant more in America than even in Britain. The idea of the Alzheimer's patients are, you know, they're kind of just left alone. I know my father-in-law is 96. We were just able to move him out of one nursing home into another because he was basically, you know, left alone. And every time we'd go in to see him, it's like there was a little bit less of him there mentally. And so I think this is a problem in America. So did they give some suggestions?
Yes. Yeah, one thing that really stood out to me as I was researching this topic was just how vital it is to our mental health for us to challenge ourselves. The phrase that comes up over and over again in the Alzheimer's literature is use it or lose it. That's what a lot of experts say about our brains. We have to use them, push them, challenge them in order to keep them firing on all pistons. And if we end up kind of mentally retiring and not seeking out new challenges, then we're likely to lose some of our mental acuity. And it could even increase our chances of suffering from some of these terrible degenerative diseases. In the research, one thing that I encountered several times was the importance of learning new things. So it's basically saying, don't just play an instrument, take up a brand new one that you've never played before. Don't just be sociable, start learning a new language and be sociable in a club of students learning that language. Don't just read books about topics that you've never contemplated before.
So the study shows that the Alzheimer's patient needs the family to kind of join in with them and help them do these things instead of just like sending them off to some nursing home and you know, just saying, well, I don't have to face this anymore. So
yeah, I think that's definitely a conclusion that could be drawn from that, just the importance of all of society, including the family members, really respecting one another regardless of age. And then, if you engage in these kinds of activities together, it's going to be strengthening the mental health of everyone involved.
I think it's interesting that you bring that up. Like I said, my father-in-law, who is he was kind of like a star chemist. He worked for years for Gulf Research. He has developed, I'll just tell you what his name was. His name was Dr. Joseph Tabor. And he actually developed what they call the Tabor number, and it's the formula for how you can get shale oil out of rock. He developed that and patented it. And so he's written books on it and all that. And now he's 96. He just turned 96 in February, and he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. But along with that, we've discovered is dementia. It comes. It's a Parkinson's-related dementia. And, you know, some days you walk in. I know we went to see him just a few months ago and walked in, and we talked Shakespeare together, and he could talk fluently about Shakespeare. We went to see him the next day. He wasn't there. And, you know, it's like he didn't know where he was. He thought his wife was still alive. And we just talked to my brother, and recently we got him out of this really bad nursing home situation. He's now into more of a home situation, and I don't know if my brother-in-law did some reading or research on it, but he recently has started to read to him, and when he reads to him, he comes out. His mind starts working better. And so, like I said, he was really in this top profession, worked in the School of Mines in the state of New Mexico, and the former presidents and directors there still come to see him. He's in a different state now, and one of them loved to fly, and they would fly to different meetings. And he wrote a book on flying, and my brother-in-law has been reading that to my father-in-law, and it's really brought him kind of back. It's brought his memory back. So I think that's a lesson. But here's the point to all of our listeners out there, all you adults out there. You know, you don't have to wait till you're in an Alzheimer's situation to get your mind, back in phase. There has been studies done on the brain and memory, and they know that reading a book will make your mind more plastic. It'll make it more moldable. In other words, you can actually bring like some real youth and vitality back into your brain by reading. So Jeremiah is shaking his head, so he must have something else here that he needs to say here. He's really good at this. I mean, he's got paper after paper over here.
Well, I could chime in just on the plasticity that you mentioned
right
there. Just everything that I read really did talk about the way that in order to retain and even improve our mental dexterity and health, if we're pushing our brains outside of their comfort zones with things like reading brand new types of topics or reading with a manner of analysis that you've never used before, things like that, then it is forcing your synapses to fire in new directions. It's forcing the neurons to carve out brand new connections with each other. These are physical things that happen in the brain when we force ourselves to read and to learn new things like that. So they're changes that are happening at the cellular level, and these are good changes. These changes are like the physical evidence of intellectual growth and of expanded thinking.
So I'm sure there's probably some limits. I mean, I don't know, back in like the 70s when I was in school, there was a really good book I remember my wife and I reading together. By the way, we're reading buddies, and we still are reading buddies. But I don't know if you remember the book Flowers for Algernon.
I've heard of it.
You know, it's kind of a sci-fi where this fellow was a Downs, and then they figured out a medication, a pill they could give him, and he brought him out, and it turns out he was a genius.
Wow.
So, but then the, you know, there was this little animal, I think it was either a mouse or a monkey. I can't remember all the details, but eventually the medication started to have the opposite effect, and he knew he was going to go backwards. And so it was really kind of a telling story. But I'm sure that you know, once a patient gets Alzheimer's, it's probably not going to totally eliminate the problem, but it can stave it off. Would that be the better way to think about that?
Yeah, I think so. There are a lot of theories about how to keep Alzheimer's at bay before it sets in. There are also things that you mentioned, like the case with your relative there, just about how to push it back once it has set in. And all of it remains theoretical at this point. Alzheimer's is still a dark riddle. You know, there's still more questions about it than answers. And in a lot of cases, even people who seem to be doing everything right, pushing themselves and really striving to learn new things, even they, like Ronald Reagan's a great example, still succumb to the ravages of this terrible disease. So there are correlations that they find, whether the disease has set in or whether it's just something that you're trying to keep from setting in. But as you said, though, there are, you know, limitations to what can be done.
But is there anything in the literature now, is there anything in the surveys that say that the more you do, let's say in middle age, you can maybe prevent Alzheimer's?
Yes. Yeah, actually, there's a study that was recently conducted. Well, it was headed up by a team at Rush University Medical Center there in Chicago. Robert S. Wilson was the head of this study, and he said, "Our study suggests that exercising your brain by taking part in activities such as reading from childhood through old age is important for brain health in old age." So even starting in childhood is going to help in old age. Basically, in this study, they looked closely at about 300 elderly men and women, most of whom were in their 80s. They were given tests of memory and thinking every year in those last years of their lives. And then the study participants also they gauged how often they engaged in rigorous reading. They measured how often they engaged in things like reading and also writing and other tasks. And then after they died, at an average age of 89, their brains were examined at autopsy for evidence of the physical signs of dementia, including the brain plaques and tangles of Alzheimer's disease. And the researchers found that people who participated in mentally challenging activities, most often, both early and late in life, had a far slower rate of decline in memory as compared to those who did not engage in reading and other such activities.
Well, that's really fascinating. I know growing up as a child, my parents were avid readers. I mean, in some ways, they fought over who got the newspaper first, and they would spend hours reading it on Sundays. You know, we never, ever had a television on, and, you know, they'd go through the whole Sunday paper, and they'd take all day to do it. I grew up with, you know, my older sister is a literature major, and I saw her reading books. So it was just around us. So, of course, I wanted to read books. And I think I went to a college prep high school, and we read books all year, and we read books for the summer. And so it is kind of interesting. My father died at 89, and his brain was just as sharp as ever. My mother died at 96. Now, she did die from Alzheimer's, but I think there were some other, she had a mini stroke, and the doctors feel that's what brought that on anyway. My father-in-law, he was still writing up until his, up until his 80s. He was still working on books, writing books, reading books. My mother-in-law died at 89. She was an avid reader. She She was a member of several book clubs, and the book clubs get together to read books, and they donate them to libraries, and so they were actively involved in that. So hopefully, listeners, you're getting the point here that you need to feed your brain as much as you need to feed your whole body, and one of the ways to do that is to challenge yourself by reading. I did pull another quote out here from the. This is a blog for seniors, and it's called Trendy Glasses. So I guess it's a lot of older people, they do have these real trendy big glasses and all that. So but here's a quote from this blog, and you can get online and read it. This blogger says, "Why is it so important for seniors to read or be read to? Is because it's important to keep the mind active. Research continues to be established on the benefits of active and lifelong learning, as well as the importance of engaging in such tasks as doing puzzles, filling out crosswords, taking classes, and reading books." And so it's really in the literature. It's really, scientists are now studying this. And here David Denby, I believe, is onto something. He even admitted himself that his job was jangling his brain. It was making jelly out of his brain because all he was doing was watching movies and writing about them. But anyway, this little quote goes on. It says, "Participating in such activities can help keep the brain young and seniors to keep their vitality and their sharp mental presence." And so I think that just matches in with all that. Here's another little article I found. This is from a nursing home. And they have what they call intergenerational programming. And what they've done is they've incorporated first and second graders into homes where elderly are there. And what's happening is the elderly read books to these kids, and they love reading books. And of course, on our second show, you heard me, reading Yertle the Turtle to the third and fourth graders here at Imperial Academy, and they loved it. But then some of these young kids, what they do is they adopt the grandparent or they adopt the older person, and they take them to their school, and they get involved in school activities with them. So I think it is really interesting that the young students, the teens, they need us. They need to see us reading. They need to see us enjoying it. They need to see us being challenged by reading and being able to converse with books. And so... I'm really enjoying this opportunity to kind of branch out our college classes, branch them out, and kind of take this out to everybody. So I think we're probably getting short on time here. So thanks, Jeremiah, for coming.
Real pleasure to be here.
You're listening to Just the Best Literature with Dennis Leap on 101.3 KPCG.
Okay, just to sum up the program today, I just want you to remember that as adults, we really do need to set an example for our young people, and we need to be reading current event things, and doing some challenging reading, I think it will help us physically. It's going to help us mentally, and I think it could even help us. Spiritually, if we deepen our thinking, we can even understand spiritual concepts even better. So again, I hope you take the suggestions from this program. Just get out, get reading. We're going to try and make it as easy for you as you can, recommend some good books. And remember my suggestion, get a reading buddy, read the same book, get together, and talk about it. Here's a quote from Harold Bloom. And Harold Bloom is a professor at Yale University, and he's quite an innovative author, and he's written on, many books, Western civilization, books from Western civilization. He's written on Shakespeare. He's written on a lot of the English poets. In fact, one of his books is one of my favorites. The book is called The Best Poems of the English Language from Chaucer through Robert Frost. He's probably most famous for a book that he wrote called, it's titled, The Western Canon, The Books in School of the Ages. And there's another little book he wrote, and I'm going to actually put it on the Twitter site so that you could get it for yourself. I think it'd be great to add to your library. But he wrote a book called How to Read and Why, and of course he discusses some of these books on the Western canon. And when we get into Old Man and the Sea next time, I want to talk a little bit more about the Western canon. And basically, that's just a collection of books that people in education or people in libraries or publishers feel that these are some of the best books ever written and they should still be read. And we'll talk more about that. There's many, 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 many books on this Western canon list. And, you know, it's more than you and I could ever read in a lifetime. And that's why this program is we're going to maybe pull some of just the best books off that. But here's a quote from his book, How to Read and Why. And maybe this is the most important thing I would like you to remember. And here's the quote. It says, "You can read merely to pass the time, or you can read with an overt urgency, but eventually you will read against the clock." In other words, all of us, you know, we're mortal, we're temporary. There's going to come a time when, well, we won't be reading anymore. He said, "Bible readers, those who search the Bible for themselves, perhaps exemplify the urgency more plainly than readers of Shakespeare, yet the quest is the same. One of the uses of reading is to prepare ourselves for change. And the final change, alas, is universal. That is, there is another life after this one." That's what he means by that. Now, Bloom wrote that in response to the question, why read? And so what he's saying is, adults out there, is that reading does influence. And if we read the best literature, it's going to influence in a positive way. And in fact, that way can be so positive, it can actually help us to make changes in our own lives. And so we need to be challenged by reading. We need to be challenged by what an author is trying to get across. And in future segments, we are going to talk about Shakespeare. And in fact, early summer, we'll be talking about the play Hamlet. I think that's an incredible play and really does lend itself to what he's saying here. Let me just say that again. One of the uses of reading is to prepare ourselves for change. I think that's a very important quote to leave you with, and all of us need to make changes in our lives. We all need to become better people and better citizens, and so let's get reading. Remember, if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. Also, at jbliterature1, you can look for special announcements about books. You can read about author information. I've loaded a lot of things up there on Ernest Hemingway to get ready for our discussions starting March 28th. But don't forget, get out there, get that book, get Old Man and the Sea, get reading. Remember, it's by Ernest Hemingway, excuse me. We'll be starting our discussion of that book on March 28th. So thank you for joining me today, and until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.